Hello, welcome to the Grand Prix 24/7 podcast, your weekly insight into the world of Formula One.
Hello, and welcome back to the Grand Prix 24/7 podcast. I'm your host, Will, and I'm joined as ever by the editor of the Grand Prix 24/7 website, Ben Stevens. Unfortunately, due to personal reasons, we had to take a short hiatus during the middle of this season, but we're happy to announce that we are back and ready to review the season so far and preview the Russian Grand Prix in Sochi this weekend. So, Ben, it's great to be back and great to have you back. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, Will, and it is great to be back. It's good to be talking to you again. It's been far too long, and I'm looking forward to dissecting what's been happening so far and looking at the Russian Grand Prix.
Yeah, so, I mean, the season so far, I think, has been a strange one. Obviously, you know, coronavirus aside, we've had some massive highs in terms of exciting racing and surprise results, but also a rather predictable feel with Lewis Hamilton taking wins in 6 out of the 9 races. He's leading the championship pretty comfortably. And to be honest, it just doesn't look like Valtteri Bottas can quite match him. So what have you made of the kind of... I know there were a lot of people who perhaps thought that Red Bull in the pre-season were looking like a potential threat to Mercedes. But, you know, and Ferrari also obviously nowhere near the pace that they were showing last year. What have you made of another season of Mercedes dominance?
Yeah, I think the best way to put it is it's disappointing, but not surprising. I mean, disappointing, not that I'm against Lewis winning or anything like that, but as you say, we hoped that Red Bull would be up there. We hoped that, or thought even expected maybe, that Ferrari would still be up there, and that hasn't happened. And when you've got a team that does their jobs as well as Mercedes does, and a driver in Lewis Hamilton who drives as well as he does always, well, I mean, the result, this is why, the result doesn't surprise me.
I guess the thing about it partly as well is that Lewis Hamilton is such a good driver and Mercedes is such a good car that you don't need to make it easy for them by, you know, not really offering it any challenge up. That's the thing. I think what we want to do is see that car pushed to its absolute limit, see Hamilton pushed to his limit. And Bottas has shown that he's probably not capable of doing that. I think Max Verstappen is capable of doing that, but we're just not getting to see it on a regular enough basis. And, you know, that comes down to maybe, you know, Red Bull not nailing their design, to Honda not being on the same level as Mercedes, and obviously Ferrari just making a massive mess of things in general. But, you know, negatives aside, there have been some really interesting aspects to the season. I think the development of Renault and McLaren, as you know, last season they were at the front of the midfield, but now they're kind of almost challenging Red Bull on genuine pace. So you know, at times they look like the second fastest car. You know, Renault certainly did in Spa and potentially in Mugello. So you know, I think that the midfield and the development of those teams, you know, obviously Racing Point with their dubious car design, Ferrari, as bad as they've been in the last few races, obviously have picked up a couple of podiums this season. I think this midfield battle has been absolutely fascinating. And even, you know, certain circuits, you can throw Pierre Gasly and AlphaTauri into that mix. So are you kind of in agreement that it's really been this season, the real story has been about the midfield?
Oh, I think that's no question. And we even saw that from race one, you know, with Lando Norris getting on the podium. But ever since then, it's been there's, because of what's been going on at the front, with sort of that gap behind Hamilton as well, that's made it even more interesting where there have been chances for them to get on the podium. And as we saw in Italy, win a race. And yeah, it's very close. There's a handful of contenders and some of those guys are very, very good drivers. And yeah, it's all sort of coming together. It's a shame it's not for wins. And maybe, you know, in 2022, when everything changes, these same drivers in these same cars will be contending for wins regularly. But yeah, as far as just providing, you know, entertainment for most races, the midfield is definitely the place to be. And while it might not be enough to sort of, you know, change perceptions when looking back in the history books. You still get to see Mercedes dominating. In real time, you know, as it's happening, it's made it a fun season to follow.
Yeah, and you look at it, you know, in totality, and you've had 9 different drivers on the podium. You've had Daniel Ricciardo picking up 3 fourth place finishes. You know, you've seen Pierre Gasly win a race. You've seen Nico Hülkenberg, you know, come in, you know, with absolutely no testing and finish 7th. I think that there have been a lot of great aspects to the season. And I think even though obviously Hamilton, I think in the end, won in Mugello rather comfortably, I've heard some people posit that maybe Bottas was the quicker driver over the weekend, but I don't necessarily think that was true. I think that you saw in that, you know, after the kind of the mayhem at the start, he really did have the pace on him and managed to bring out a pretty significant gap. But even though Hamilton was dominant kind of after that opening stage, that was an incredibly entertaining race in the midfield. I think that, you know, until Lance Stroll had that tyre failure, you had Stroll and Ricciardo and Albon all vying for that third position on the podium. And yeah, I thought that was another really entertaining race, even kind of mayhem aside.
Yeah, absolutely. Just that, as you say, that battle for the last place was very interesting. And I think, I mean, as much as you don't want to sort of harp on it because it's a constant story, but, you know, the way sort of Bottas dropped the ball, you know, after doing so well at the start, was, you know, very interesting as well. There was definitely a lot to go on in that particular race, even though the end result was something, you know, more or less Mercedes 1-2 that we've come to expect.
Yeah, and the thing I don't want to be critical of Mercedes, as some people have, because, you know, they're just doing a really, really good job. I think that we obviously saw last year that Hamilton only picked up 4 pole positions. I think maybe Bottas had a similar number. And they were obviously concerned that Ferrari's engine power had caught up, that Red Bull in certain kind of, you know, high downforce requiring tracks had an edge. And they just put everything into it over the winter, and they just done a fantastic job. And that's not their fault that other teams haven't been able to keep up. If you actually look back at 17, 18 and 19, there were pretty tight battles, you know. Hamilton versus Vettel, obviously, in 17 and 18. And then, you know, Leclerc picking up 7 pole positions last season. Last year, it was by no means a Mercedes walkover. But the other teams have gone backwards, or at least they haven't gone forwards as quickly as Mercedes have. So this is not just, you know, a repeat of the last 3 seasons where it was far more competitive. I think that you can only give Mercedes credit for the fact that, you know, they weren't as far clear as potentially they would have liked to be, if that, you know, in terms of absolute comfort. And, you know, they've just smashed out of the park once again, and the other teams haven't had an answer for them.
Yeah, and I think that's you summed it up pretty much perfectly there, Will. That is the story. I mean, it's not Mercedes' fault that they've done a better job than everyone else, and been doing it for such a long time. As much as it is frustrating for, you know, us wanting to see an honest-to-goodness championship fight, especially after, as you say, last year, where until things changed towards the end, it did seem like Ferrari were giving them that. But yeah, it's up to the other teams to catch up. It's not up to Mercedes to be pulled back to the, or, you know, the rulemakers or whoever to pull Mercedes back to the pack. That doesn't happen. It doesn't happen. And yeah, we just got to sort of, from that respect, we obviously have to take our caps off to Mercedes. We've been doing it for years. I've put my cap on my head in 6 years now. But we need to, same time, sort of, you know, urge these other teams to step their game up. And it's, you know, that's sort of been the concerning thing, is that it's awesome to see McLaren and Renault and Racing Point step up, but there should still be a gap between them and Red Bull, like a bigger gap, I mean. And then obviously Ferrari as well. And that gap has almost dissipated, or in Ferrari's case, completely dissipated, because they've taken these massive steps backward. So, yeah, I mean, that's not Mercedes' fault by any means.
Yeah, I think moving on from Mercedes, because I think we've all probably had enough of them being talked about, and I think that there are some other interesting storylines that perhaps we haven't been able to touch on in the last few weeks. I guess firstly, we can touch on the takeover at Williams by I think it's a Canadian company, Donaldson Capital. Obviously, this has led to the Williams family taking a step back from Formula One, and you know, the first time in a number of years that they haven't been involved. What do you make of this story? What do you make of the fact that Claire has stepped away as deputy team principal? And you know, are you concerned that this is kind of going to lead to Williams becoming extinct from Formula One, or do you think that this was just a necessary step?
Yeah, unfortunately, I do think it was a necessary step. I just think, I don't think I'm alone in saying this either, that as much as it was great having this family-run business in the sport and having them, and they've been very successful and they've been around for a very long time at this point, I think the truth is that the sport had outgrown that sort of business model. And I think we've seen that particularly in the last few years where they had this success to start the V6 Turbo era, which they just have not been able to capitalize on. And, you know, I don't want to say that's all Claire Williams' fault, or maybe even any of her fault. I don't know. I'm not, you know, not in the factory. I'm not seeing who's doing what. But there's been some mismanagement there. And you combine that with the lack of money they've got compared to the big teams where we would all like them to be, and it just seems like it's right for a change. I don't know anything about Donaldson Capital, so I'm not going to say, yep, this is great, this is definitely going to turn everything around. But I think it's at the same time, as I said, it was time for the Williams family to take a step back. So hopefully this is a case of a team turning into another McLaren, that's what we'd all like, and not another Brabham. But I guess on that front, we'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, the Williams brand has a huge amount of kind of resonance with Formula One fans, and I think that a lot of people are attached to that name, and I think that brings Donaldson Capital a huge amount of kind of brand recognition and support. So I do think it would be a strange one to want to move away from the name. And you know, looking at the way that Formula One seems to be heading towards a kind of franchise model with the new Concorde agreement, I do think it makes sense to kind of keep it as that Williams franchise, as you said with McLaren. You know, that doesn't have anything to do with the family of Bruce McLaren anymore, but they're still very much, and that's part of their history and the heritage behind the brand, and that's what makes it an attractive brand for sponsors and people who want to buy McLaren cars. You know, it's because it's the same brand as Senna, and you know, Hamilton and Prost and Hakkinen. That's why McLaren is valuable, and that's why they keep it around, even though it's not owned by the same family. And in the same way that Williams is the car of you know, Nigel Mansell and of Frank Williams and of Patrick Head. That is its heritage, and that is what makes it special, and that's why people still love it to these days. That's why Sebastian Vettel is, you know, shelling out money to buy the 1992 championship winning car. You know, I don't think it matters necessarily that the family aren't necessarily still in charge, because there's still a huge amount that Donaldson can benefit from having that name and having that heritage. And I think that to change it would be a real shame. I don't see what value there would be in doing that.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you there. I think whatever sponsor you bring in, you know, and it can be, as we've seen in the past when it was a family-run team, you can bring in BMW and be BMW Williams, and that works fine. So, as you say, I don't see any reason to jettison the Williams name completely.
Moving on to another kind of ongoing storyline, I think this kind of, it reared its head in pre-season, as we're kind of looking at how to spice up the potential double headers. But then I think following some comments from David Croft on commentary during the Italian Grand Prix at Monza, and then some kind of subsequent comments from Ross Brawn, reverse grids has very much been on the agenda. I think I've gone on record on this podcast before saying that I'm not a fan, but it does seem to be gaining some momentum. I know that they're very conscious of kind of enhancing the show, I guess you could say. But what's your opinion on the concept of reverse grids, and you know, how do you think that we should approach it? Do you think it's an alley we should go down?
Yeah, well, I mean, like you, I think we've discussed this on the podcast before, so there's at risk of contradicting myself here. Forgive me, listeners, it's been a few months. I would say that it's probably not the best idea, but I think Carlos Sainz might have said this yesterday. I sort of agree with him in that, like, as much as I don't really think the idea is going to be beneficial, I am curious to see it sort of happen at least once and just see, you know, how it plays out. I think, at least in the short term, by short term I mean until the end of the 2021 season, there is some value because we know there's going to be this dominant team in Mercedes Red Bull, you know, improves or whatever. It's still not going to be, you know, five teams contending at best. It's going to be two, unless Ferrari, you know, causes a miracle, which I don't think is going to happen. So in that respect, it does make sense to me to sort of mix it up because it's not going to happen otherwise. And at the same time, you're not necessarily penalizing these ultra successful teams, Mercedes, Red Bull, too much because they'll still come through the field. Long term, I think if you're doing all these other things that just make it a level playing field and the cars are going to be, relatively speaking, much more even in pace, well then, yeah, that's when, like, I wouldn't want to say it because then you're sort of diminishing the accomplishment of winning a race, which is what I think a lot of other drivers have said. So, yeah, that's sort of my stance. I think, as you kind of alluded to there, Will, I think it is looking like we'll see it next year. And that's because the sort of voting on such matters changes, where it only needs a majority approval to pass. So we probably will see it at some point next year. But yeah, past next year, when everything else is supposed to be equal, it doesn't seem to me like we would need that equalizing measure. But yeah, I'm curious to see it try it at least once.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a huge fan of qualifying and the current qualifying format. And I think qualifying is an important part of Formula One. And, you know, so many of the great drivers, their kind of legacy and aura is built off this ability to just pull out this fantastic lap when the chips are down and they really need to. And I just think that it's just a huge loss to Formula One if that goes away. You know, that's the reason I think so many fans fall in love with certain drivers, because of, you know, the kind of qualifying is often the only time we really get to see someone push a car to the absolute limit. And if you take away qualifying, you don't get, you know, Senna at Monaco, you don't get that Hamilton lap at Singapore. That doesn't happen, because otherwise it's just going to be about, you know, obviously over, you know, the idea of Verstappen cutting through the field from the back of the grid is going to be pretty entertaining. But also there's something just to be said for watching the drivers in great cars at the kind of peak level of performance, absolutely like tearing around the track and, you know, at ridiculous speeds, but also with like inch perfect precision. And I just think that would be a huge loss. Obviously, I agree with you in the sense that I don't think this is going to be a long-term measure, because I think when we get to 2022 and the new cars that are supposedly easier to pass, easier to follow, and generally closer together, it will not be required, hopefully. But I think even if this suddenly doesn't magically bring all the cars together, which has, you know, never happened before in Formula One, so I don't see why it would suddenly happen now, I still think that getting rid of qualifying is just not the way to do it. You know, one idea I heard posited was potentially, you know, with using the token system, but maybe, you know, grading that, so maybe the teams at the top only get two tokens and maybe you get maybe three or four further down the grid. Maybe that would be a good way of helping kind of like equalize things a little bit. You know, it's not a huge thing, but it just gives them slightly more of a chance. But I just think that taking away qualifying would be a real loss to the sport, and I think that they should focus more on getting a set of regulations that will lead to more even racing and cars that can follow and overtake better than a reverse grids. Because I just think that, for one, it takes away something that, in my view, is very important to kind of like the soul and the fun of Formula One, but also I don't think that the reason that the Italian Grand Prix, for example, was so great was because the grid was reversed. It wasn't about loads of overtaking. It was about, you know, cars of similar length pace, of similar kind of pace, pushing each other right to the final lap. I don't think that, you know, a Mercedes breezing past a Williams down the back straight with DRS because it's just like 2 seconds quicker, I don't think that's great racing either. I think what you want to see is cars that are fairly evenly matched pushing as hard as they can to get past one another and having these kind of battles over a number of laps. I just don't think that reverse grid racing produces that. I think that the focus needs to be on the cars and not on the sporting wrecks. But anyway, I think I've spoken about that for probably quite long enough.
Yeah, good rant there, Will.
Shall we move on to looking ahead to the Russian Grand Prix, I say enthusiastically. I think that this is probably unanimously agreed upon as being one of the worst tracks on the calendar. And, you know, it's a track that Mercedes have never lost at. So, Ben, explain to me why Mercedes aren't going to win.
Mercedes aren't going to win because they're actually taking this weekend off. So they're running on Friday just for the fun of it. After that, they're all going on a bit of a holiday. I think Vlad Putin's invited them over to his holiday home up in the Ural Mountains. So that's why they're not going to win, if that's the explanation you want. But no, realistically, it's going to be one of them too, unless something crazy happens again. And I think the one thing that does make this weekend sort of intriguing, because as you say, I'm 100% in agreement, this track is not very exciting, but historically, and this is sort of, you know, relatively speaking here, this is one of Lewis's weaker tracks. I think he's only won it 3 times, which is for him a travesty. And he has had a few weekends, I think it might have been 2018, if I'm thinking correctly, where he has really struggled. Might have been 2017, actually, sorry. Where he has really struggled. And that wasn't like, you know, anything crazy happening. He just sort of didn't come to grips with the car on this particular track. So maybe we see that again. I'm not reading too much into, just FYI for the listeners, we're recording this between practice one and practice two. So obviously Valtteri Bottas was top and Lewis was second last. I'm not reading too much into that, but there is potential here for Lewis to not even necessarily slip up, but just, you know, he's not going to find his rhythm as much as he does at some other tracks. Having said that, we just saw in Mugello where he was slowest through the first day and a half of the race weekend until all of a sudden come the end of, you know, Q2 he wasn't, and then from then on he was pretty much on it. So yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if he goes out and romps home as he normally does, but there is that little bit of intrigue where he could have a few issues.
Yeah, I think this is a track that Bottas earned his first win in Formula One on, and I think that generally it seems to suit him fairly well. We should not forget that Hamilton obviously won here last year, and I think he out-qualified Bottas. I don't think that it's like Bottas is way better than Hamilton here or anything like that. It's just a track he's had a fair amount of success at. So I do think the battle will be between those two drivers. It'll be interesting to see if Red Bull can make a challenge. Obviously, this is a circuit famed for low tyre wear, so I unfortunately don't think that will be the case. But, you know, this isn't as much of a power track, I guess. You know, you've got a lot of slow right-hand turns, especially in the final sector. So I'd be interested to see if Red Bull can, you know, get a handle on their car this weekend and maybe cause Mercedes some issues. But yeah, I'm accepting a Mercedes 1-2, and obviously it'd just be interesting to see which way around that is. Obviously, we've also got the added thing of Hamilton going for the 91st win and equaling Michael Schumacher's record. But yeah, I'm not expecting a fantastic race. I think that, nonetheless, just seeing who can come out on top in the midfield will be interesting. Renault have obviously looked pretty strong on some of these kind of lower downforce tracks. And I think that they seem to have kind of finally found a setup that suits them. Ricciardo in particular looks very comfortable in that car finally after, you know, almost a year and a half. Ben, who do you see coming out on top in this midfield battle in Sochi?
Yeah, well, again, this is the exciting bit, and this could go in a wide range of directions. So I'm looking forward to that. Also, do want to just say real quickly, just looking at the stats, I want to correct myself. I think Lewis has won 4, not 3 Grand Prix. So still horrible by his standards. We expect 100% in everything he does, but can't have that all the time. But yeah, back to the midfield. So I think it's very tough to say. I think this track might suit Renault's car quite well. And as you say, Daniel Ricciardo in particular has been on it. Me saying that is very biased, though. So I'm not going to go with him to lead the midfield. I think I'm going to go with McLaren, actually. I'm going to go with probably Carlos Sainz. I think he's really hit a rich vein of form. And then it would probably be Ricciardo and Renault in there. But, I mean, between those two teams, obviously Racing Point are still up there. You know, there's a lot of different ways you go. I mean, really, just, you know, if you picked those between those three teams and just got a dartboard out and just threw, you mean, you could pick and just be more accurate than us saying anything particular, because I think it's that close. And hopefully that sort of makes up for what we assume is going to be a very sort of straightforward race.
Yeah, the Racing Point is particularly difficult because obviously Stroll has the update and he looked pretty strong with that update in Mugello, and I think he might have got past Ricciardo to get that final spot on the podium. So it'll be interesting to see if he can kind of match up well against Ricciardo, Sainz and Norris this weekend. I think Perez, as much as obviously I think he's still a better driver than Stroll, he really hasn't had a great season by his really high standards. So I think he'll definitely be determined to, one, put himself in the shop window, and two, just kind of regain a bit of pride after what will, you know, I don't think that would be a very pleasant thing to, you know, have what's happened to him getting dumped by Racing Point. So I definitely see him as another driver to watch, even though he obviously doesn't have the full update package on that Racing Point. Before we go, Ben, shall we just dive back into our predictions? Unbelievably, I think the last race we did was Spanish Grand Prix, and we actually both scored 3 points for getting the correct podium. So things are suddenly hotting up in the battle to be prediction king. But let's go for our Russian podium. Ben, who you got? 1, 2, 3.
Well, I'm going to be boring. I'm going to say Lewis 1, Valtteri 2, Max Verstappen 3.
Yeah, that is pretty boring. But I think it shows that the one time we actually got it right was predicting those three drivers. So, you know, why mess with a winning formula? I think I'm going to slightly differ. I actually think that Bottas is going to win. You know, he's been really close in qualifying. And even if he doesn't get on pole, there's obviously the massive slipstream going into turn two, because obviously turn one is that kind of not really a turn, but it's considered a turn. So, you know, provided Mercedes don't come up with a kind of Vettel-Leclerc-Ferrari plan from last year, I think Bottas, even if he doesn't get on pole, maybe could slipstream Hamilton. So that'd be an interesting one to follow. And obviously, if he does get ahead of Hamilton going into turn two, then it's going to be pretty tough to pass. So I think Bottas just sneaks this from Hamilton. Also, like, come on, who really wants to see Hamilton equal Schumacher's record in Russia when he could do it in Germany? Just saying. And then third, I'm actually going to go with Ricciardo. No real reason. Don't necessarily even think that the Renault is going to be quick here, but I just think he's been so good this season and, you know, really deserving of more. He deserves that podium. He deserves to get Cyril a tattoo and, you know, delight David Croft. The move to Renault hasn't been maybe what he dreamt of, but I think he's, this season especially, he's really shown how much of a top driver he is. and, you know, 3-4th places. He just needs to convert one of them into a podium. And I think that while it hasn't been a success, I don't think that in any way he's damaged his reputation by coming in and pretty handily beating Hülkenberg and Ocon. You know, I think he's shown that, you know, looking beyond Hamilton, Leclerc, Verstappen, Bottas, he's definitely one of the best. He's definitely up there as one of the best drivers on the grid. So, yeah, I'm going to go for Ricciardo for the podium. Ben, who are you going for first DNF?
First DNF. Ooh. It's always a bit of a stab in the dark, this one. I am going for... Should I go for Daniil Kvyat? Yeah, at his home race. I'm going to go with the torpedo himself. He's going to torpedo his way out of this one nice and early.
Yeah, when in doubt, pick someone at the home race. And if there's no one with the home race, pick Daniil Kvyat.
Exactly. Best of both worlds here.
Now, in fairness to him, he hasn't done too much torpedo action this season. He's actually been boring, which has been strange, because he's not a driver you associate with just kind of plodding around. You usually think it's either like boom or bust with him. So,
yeah,
it's not a bad pick. I'd probably tempted to go for him. I'm going to go for Nicholas Latifi. I think that he's been okay this season, even though he's been pretty far off his teammate. But, you know, he still looks like he's got a spin in him every now and again. And, you know, especially if that Williams...
Well, he's already crashed.
He crashed in practice one, didn't he? So, you know, especially if that Williams... Because he's obviously a little bit quicker in qualifying than it is in the race. You know, if he qualifies maybe up in kind of 16th, then being a bit slower on the opening lap, I can see him coming to blows. So I'm going to go for Latifi.
I like it.
Okay, well, that brings to an end our kind of reintroduction episode. It's great to be back, and I hope our listeners haven't missed us too much, all three of them. Ben, great to speak to you, and we will be back for a race review on Monday or Sunday, depending on, you know, time zones. It's actually been my birthday, so if I'm a bit worse for wear on Sunday, then we'll have to push it to Monday. But, you know, thanks as ever for listening. Please do follow us on Twitter at Grand Prix 24/7 or visit our website www.grandprix247.com. And we'll be back soon with another edition of the podcast. Bye-bye.
See ya.